Iambic Audiobooks presents You Can't Get There From Here by Mary Anderson. Read by Elizabeth Klett. Prologue. Because of Adam. As I began packing, those words ran through my head, reaffirming my decision. I checked my watch. Mom would be home late. She wouldn't look into my bedroom that night. She never did. It'd be almost 24 hours before she realized I'd gone. Gone to live at the studio, to begin the new life awaiting me. While rummaging through my clothes, I thought of some other words. Something Gertrude Stein had written when she left home. She had vowed not to return until she'd become a lion. Well, I'd never return. Strange to feel so unemotional about running away. No, I wasn't running away, but toward something. Toward Adam, the studio, and my destiny in the theater. My life was with Adam now, not here. Only my ghost remained in this room, the spirit of what I once was. I had no attachment to the possessions around me. They belonged to someone else, bits and pieces of an old life I could happily discard. And yet, each represented something meaningful from my childhood. I glanced around the room, noticing the music box Dad had given me on my 12th birthday, the teddy bear who'd shared my hospital bed when I had had an appendectomy. And of course, my doll, Denise. She was a beat-up, raggedy thing now, but over the years I'd told her all my secrets. I'd feel funny leaving her behind. I wrapped her in a scarf and stuck her in the bottom of the suitcase. Poor Denise. Her cloth face would never come clean again. I'd shed too many teenage tears on it. She had been my only real friend during the breakup. Some say there are times when a person's whole life can flash before him in an instant. I'd never thought that was true. But as I packed Denise, I sensed a feeling similar to that. Staring down at her face, it brought back all the anger and confusion I'd known the past year. Yes, I could still feel anger whenever I thought of the breakup. Even the words turned my stomach. They were mean, nasty words, and I hated them, because they were true. In a sense, everything did break apart when Mom and Dad split. Jamie was already off in college, so it didn't affect him much. Sometimes I think nothing affects Brother Jamie's buffalo hide. His glib, sardonic attitude makes him able to roll with the punches. At 19, he'd already accumulated an army of catchphrases appropriate for any and all situations. "That's the way the cookie crumbles, old girl," he'd said when I'd called him with the news. He'd just completed his first term at Boston University. "No sense my coming home now. This libido thing's predictable in middle age. Just hang in there, Reggie. Things'll shape up soon enough." Was that what bothered me most? How quickly everything did shape up. I never understood it. Within 6 months, Mom had abandoned the life of a pampered suburban housewife and taken on the world. She'd become a different person, a stranger. Suddenly, our home in Larchmont, Mom's garden parties, PTA meetings, driving Dad to the station every morning, all became things of the past. She was battling the world now, going to college at night, working days, and creating a new life. Home and family were things of the past. And so was I, a leftover from a previous existence, a vestigial attachment, long outgrown. I might have accepted it all if Mom had always been a world beater, but she was the classic male fantasy version of the perfect mate, pre-ERA, pre-raised consciousness, the happy homemaker, waiting at the door with a martini and a wink. Mom's greatest pride was sharing my dress size and being mistaken for my sister. As I piled my Playbill magazines in my knapsack, I thought back to the night when all that changed. Dad hadn't been on the 547 or the 609. Mom waited at the station until 7, then drove home. We ate the dried-out roast, then I went to my room. Dad returned about 9, and the argument began. I heard it all as I lay upstairs. It was a typical scenario. Dad had had a few drinks to get up his nerve, and soon it all came pouring out. He wasn't happy. He wasn't fulfilled. He was 45, losing his hair, tied into an executive job he hated. The mortgage, country club fees, and private schools were all millstones around his neck. And he'd met a girl. A sweet young thing who understood his midlife crisis and was panting to share it with him. That's when Mom hit the ceiling. I'm sure she would have reacted differently if Dad had fallen for someone his own age, some superior female who could fulfill his intellectual needs. Mom would have wished him well, packed his shirts, and kissed him a fond goodbye. After all, Mom had never felt she was much in the brains department. So if Dad had run off with a female professor, she might have accepted it. But this was a 20-year-old waitress. I could hear her voice cracking. "My God, John, she's barely older than Reggie. What possible interest could you have in her aside from sex?" What indeed? The argument went downhill from there. The next day, Dad cleared out his things. He wiped his hands of the good life and took off for Venice, California to find himself. With Fern. I only saw him once after that. He flew back 2 months later to tie up business, confer with divorce lawyers, and put the house in Mom's name. She wasn't to get alimony, just the house and car. Jamie was on scholarship at school, which meant most of his fees were paid. His trust fund covered whatever expenses remained. Mine would take care of some college expenses, too, as long as I didn't decide to go Ivy League. With my grades, that was an impossibility anyway. In short, Dad felt his financial obligations were over, and his parental ones as well. Now he had more important things on his mind. He wanted me to meet Fern. We made a date for a Saturday, and I met them in the city for lunch. Dad seemed strained and uncomfortable. He babbled about the new meaning he'd found in the simple life, selling roller skates at an inn boutique in Venice. "Being close to young people gives me a charge." Fern nibbled her salad, patted Dad's cheek, and stroked a wisp of graying hair over his bald spot. She was braless, slightly dippy, and extremely stupid. It didn't take us long to realize our meeting had been a putrid idea. Dad's frantic pursuit of youth was having a reverse effect. Suddenly, he seemed very middle-aged. Even his sense of humor, which before could always be relied on, was gone. I'd gotten my name through Dad's sense of humor. When he'd first seen me after I was born, all red and angry-faced at the new world I'd exploded into, he couldn't help laughing. He said I seemed to be saying, "We are not amused." So he named me Victoria Regina, which has always been Reggie for short. Well, I still wasn't amused. Dad's whole affair was tawdry, tacky, and extremely sad. I hoped when he finally found himself, he wouldn't be expecting too much. Some letters followed that meeting. They were filled with pop phrases, "far out" and "cosmic," obviously acquired from Fern. I tore them up. After that, there were some postcards. Then, nothing. For the first few months, Mom took the double martini route. I went to school as usual, zombieing my way through classes. I managed to maintain a C average, hoping to ensure my graduation. Not that it mattered. School seemed insipid and pointless and totally irrelevant, with the exception of drama class, of course. In order to remain eligible for that, I had to keep from failing. But that was tricky, since I began not going to school on Wednesdays. Instead, I took the train into the city and caught a matinee. Luckily, I had a hefty stash of babysitting money to finance me. After I'd cut classes several Wednesdays, I was sent to the school guidance counselor. Mrs. Lansing was a small, mousy, pale woman, tired and drained from ineffectively ministering to juvenile problems for far too many years. She sat at her desk, buried beneath a mountain of papers and books, weary at the thought of having to add another case history to the avalanche encircling her. "Why have you been cutting class?" she asked with obvious disinterest. I explained my parents had split. She nodded blankly, then began writing. Another form to be added to column B. It was painfully clear that Mrs. Lansing couldn't help me. So I decided to help us both. I lied. I told her I went to the city on Wednesdays to see a shrink. Group therapy sessions for me and Mom, then private sessions for us both. Mrs. Lansing looked relieved, one less form to add to column B. She made a note on my records excusing me from classes Wednesday. As long as you don't fail your subjects, she added dutifully, you wouldn't want to spoil your chances for college. No chance of that. I'd already decided college was an anachronism, a 4-year postponement of life, and far too costly. We'd already dropped the cleaning lady, country club dues, and subscriptions to homey magazines. We'd even stopped having papers delivered. While Mom blithely continued dropping olives in her martini glasses, I discovered the world of TV dinners and making do. But it all came to a head soon enough. I'd come home from a late rehearsal at school one night. I'd gotten the lead in the end-term production of Member of the Wedding, and this had been our first read-through. I totally identified with the character of Frankie, alone and alienated as life swiftly erupted around her. It seemed to mirror my own life. I had to chop off all my hair for the part, but I didn't care. I would have chopped off an arm to get it. It was midnight when I returned home to what had become a typical scene. Mom plunked on the sofa, awash in a sea of gin bottles. The lights were out and the film projector was going. She'd been sitting all evening, watching dozens of old home movies. Films of us on our motorboat, Lilliput, Kitty birthdays on the lawn, Jamie's high school graduation, Christmas celebrations. 20 years of family domesticity condensed on film. All the happy times. Poor Mom seemed so wistful and forlorn, trying to recapture those golden days, however fleetingly. And I suddenly felt guilty. I'd been no support at all. Well, perhaps we could be a family again. Things didn't have to fall apart around us. I could buckle down, get a job, learn to cook, share the responsibility. If family life was so important to Mom, we could reconstruct it somehow. I tiptoed up behind her to tell her so. As I was about to place my hand on her shoulder, she glanced up at the screen and shouted, 20 years! What a goddamn waste! Then she finished her drink, hurled the glass into the fireplace, and switched off the projector. She never saw me standing in the dark as she stumbled up to bed. In a sense, she never saw me again after that. The next morning, Mom began her new life. Of course, she'd been building up to it for months, but to me it seemed as if it happened overnight. She got a job as a receptionist, began catching up on unpaid bills, and started classes at the state university at Purchase. That's when our family officially dissolved. Our house at 1342 Laurel Road became an 8-room monster, consuming fuel, but no longer a home. And I became an anachronism, too. Sure, I was bitter. Maybe it was selfish, but I couldn't help it. Quite honestly, I had felt more comfortable with Mom the other way. After all, women of her generation were supposed to fall apart when their husbands left. Thinking Mom missed the old days was something to hang on to. It was more upsetting to realize she decided being a homemaker and raising a family had been a stupid waste of time. No, things were never the same between Mom and me after that. She constructed a new life for herself, and I wasn't part of it. I managed to bumble through my last few months of high school. The only high point was my appearance in Member of the Wedding. I got 3 curtain calls, but Mom wasn't there to see it. She was attending the first in a series of seminars, Zen and Feminism. Ah, yes. Predictable. Well, who cared? As Professor Higgins announced to Eliza Doolittle, I can do without anybody. I have my own soul, my own spark of divine fire. No, that wasn't true. I couldn't do without Adam. He was more than a teacher, more than a director, more than a coach. He was my lifeline to the theater and the new exciting world that lay ahead. A buffer through the rough times, too. From now on, Adam would always be there, the guiding force, making sense of all of it. I checked my watch again. 9 o'clock. Mom wouldn't be home for at least 3 hours. I rummaged through my closet one last time. I wouldn't need the roller skates. My new schedule allowed little time for sports. Besides, they reminded me of Dad and Venice and everything I longed to forget. I packed my portable writing desk, a wooden box Jamie had made in shop class when he was 16. I rarely used it, though. Jamie was the letter writer, not I. In fact, the box's main contents were the letters he'd sent me since going off to college. I hated letter writing. Whenever I had something to say, it bubbled up into a long, one-sided telephone conversation. Jamie would listen on the other end. "I don't know how I feel about that. Let me think on it," he'd answer. Then he'd jot off a 3-page letter the next morning. I browsed through some of the letters before packing them. Some were laid out like legal documents. I reread a typical paragraph. Problem. "So, Reggie, old girl, you seem unduly distressed over Mom's rapid personality change. But it seems perfectly normal to me. It's in direct proportion to Dad's. One ripple on the water affects the entire pond, you know. Conclusion. When you're in a whirlpool, you're bound to get wet." What else should I expect from a philosophy major? Besides, most of Jamie's terse remarks were true. After all, I was caught up in a whirlpool myself and could testify to its effects. From the moment I'd set foot in the studio 2 months earlier, I should have known I was destined to be there. And the first time I saw Adam, I should have known he was ordained to be my teacher. But had I really known that then? Or had I just been caught up in the excitement of the moment, and after, one event had simply led to another, without my planning any of them? As I glanced around the room for what I knew would be the final time, I began to reconstruct each ripple that had led to my personal whirlpool. I began with Patsy.